call it this preaching. Yeah, well, no, preaching. I'm not going to retain that much. And unlike other preaching, like those of the altar general, this one is not what is called preaching initially. So we can allow so accountant general and UG welcome. We'll also welcome the auditor general office, among guests, so on. Now, I think we will very unusual hand over to Clement to take us through. تغطيلك الكون فور المكتب الكون فور هوتيمون كان the report that I'm going to provide pick up and I will comment also on some of the developments with the issues of the full report that was the general issues in the interim period, which is the general report that came a few weeks ago. Well, maybe a quick reflection, because there is a point in the slide here that talks to the use of content and movement. Again, one reflection of that one main relation to that. But the content will deal with the issue that indicated they will look at what the outcomes that the past few years, look at the tools that we provided to the department to use in order to assess the environment and be able to respond to challenges, and what findings we find in life and what alignment we see between that tool and what findings. And then we finalize by talking about the initiatives that we do as observers in general. It is in this area that I think the committee will have a lot of interest. And a lot of that things will come out as the questions have been asked, and quite a lot of things that we see. Just a quick background, we now, 12 years, we are in 13th year of the PFM. And we, in that 13 years, I think we've seen improvements in certain areas, we've seen progression in some areas. But overall, if you look from the time before the PFMA till now, we do have a much more transparent and a lot more very high requirements in terms of reporting and accountability that we hold as state institutions. But with the experience that we had, we then thought that we needed to find a scientific way, and there were a number of reasons I'll talk about them later. We need to have a scientific way in which we are able to assess progress that we are making. But also health department to be able to make a much more scientific assessment of the progress they are making, and enable them and empower them to respond to whatever challenges they may be facing, one being there to assist the department. And financial management can be to ensure the most developed in 2008 was meant expected to do. While that gives us an assessment, we still, for us to see whether what we pick up in that assessment is in fact a reflection of what's happening, the things have come in, they audit, and they give us a picture. And that picture is only independent and objective view that we have that helps us to see whether we're making progress or not. We may agree or disagree with certain issues, but it is the only objective measure that we have. So this presentation covers the report that we did last year. And I will talk to the details. Before going into the details, I think the committee already knows the different types of audit outcomes, but I will just reflect on them quickly. The address, in my opinion, the address and the disclaimer. My calculating here is somewhat misleading, because in my opinion, the adverse opinion and the disclaimer, both of them are the most adverse types of reporting that I will explain. With the adverse opinion, that's where the auditors are able to make a view, to make a determination that things are going bad, and they're going bad in a big way. That's just to try and explain it in everyday language. The adverse opinion, the auditors are able to make an opinion that things are going bad, and they're going bad in a big way in an institution. And there may be areas where there's disagreement between the auditors and the institution, but generally, that auditors are able to formulate a view, a positive view of what was happening. It's the same on the other hand. Due to certain limitations, usually limitations of the information available to the auditors, auditors are not able to make an informed view.
ken omida se nak ta se ta ken most of the opinion we should be read next time we do this will change it right. Because if we don't have information about what's happening, then it's very few things that are wrong. And we need the framework that we have, which encourages people to have transparency and find themselves in a situation where you don't get some of the information. Therefore, that for me is a very, very serious situation. And then qualified opinion, I can call it as, are able to determine that things are not going accordingly, there are misstatements in the financial information that you're looking at, may have certain elements in it that are not quite a reflection of what happened. And then there are situations where there's an unqualified audit report. And an unqualified audit report means that the auditors, based on the samples that they have selected, they are able to formulate an opinion that what you are reading in the accounting business report reflects the true picture of what happened in the institution. And obviously, a clean audit, the concept that came in 2009, 2010, is talking about a situation where everything that the auditor looked at, they could not find anything that was going on. And I can emphasize this. The audit picks up a sample and looks at that sample, and that sample is done objectively, and therefore the sample ought to be a balanced view of what's happening in the organization, because the random sample is done objectively. What is in that sample should reflect what happens in the organization. One thing that I have to emphasize to the members of COPA here is that an audit report is a report that is reporting on a report. So the real accountability report is the annual report of the fact. All of the other pages, not the 3 or 4 pages or 2 pages of the audit report. What the audit report does is gives you an assurance as the person who's reading the report of the accounting officer, that what you are reading reflects fairly what happened in that institution. So as you read that report, you can be comfortable that everything you're looking at, in fact, reflects the truth. Nothing more, nothing less. So the use of the audit report has got to help us to be more vigilant in interrogating the annual report that has been put before the committee. It's an important emphasis to be made, because you sometimes get a sense that the question, and I've seen this when it comes as the treasury, and sometimes when I come and other departments are being asked by other committees of scope, you sometimes find a few where a lot of questions are raised on the audit report, and less questions get raised on the service delivery issues and other issues that the accounting officer is reporting on. And sometimes there can be a lot missed in the accountability there. And if an opportunity arises later, I might be able to give some examples. But suffice today the moment that the audit report helps you to interrogate the annual report with a degree of assurance that what you are seeing in the annual report reflects what is being said there in that annual report. The audit outcomes over the years, and what we haven't done here is to show this going back to 1998-99. In 1998-99, you had 56% of government departments and other institutions receiving an unqualified audit. 56%. And the reporting requirements at that time were not as stringent as they are today. The accountability requirements were not as stringent as they are today. So and that picture has been improving since then, up until around about 2003-2004. And in 2004, if you will recall, that was the time when most almost all of the requirements of the PFMA had to be complied with by all institutions. If you go back to the memo that introduced the PFMA, by 2004, you needed to have complied with all of the requirements. So there's a number of things that were staggered. So a lot of the, some of the improvements was on the backdrop that certain things were not yet required. And the fact that obviously there was election in 2004. So in 2005, the picture dropped. And then started picking up again. Now picking up in the backdrop of improved financial reporting. So the improvement that we saw, starting from 2004, going on to around about 2008, was improvements that were being achieved with increased accountability features. And then we came to 2009, and the picture began to sort of move slightly down or flat at time. And as you can see, the blue bar and the green bar, I prefer to use them both, and particularly because the green bar is still far from what it might to be. So looking at the green bar alone sends a picture to everybody that says things are not working well, when in fact the blue bar means a lot in terms of good governance. Okay? So if you look at both of those, it's 47% unqualified plus 19% clean audit in 2007-2008, which makes about 6%. The following year, the total makes about 7%. So it's relatively flat. 2009-2010, the picture begins to improve, but the clean audit is going down. And it moves to slightly to 57%, and then 2010-2011, we could see a much bigger improvement to about 72% unqualified, overall unqualified, and to 84% in 2011-2012. This was at the national department. So you see a constant improvement in the audit outcome. And this feature should bode well for an environment in which various institutions are able to have informed, to have credible information that people are so that they can make the decisions they need to make. And if they have credible information, the decisions are likely to be high quality decisions, and therefore you can improve their behavior. That's the link with financial management. Sometimes you think of financial management as if financial management for its own sake, whereas as government, we are in government, you know, that improve their behavior. So the picture here has been improved. If the general report of that, we pick up the provinces and we look at the provinces, five provinces went down and four provinces were improving. The overall picture nationally is only a slight improvement from last year. But that's the dealing with the national picture here. Now, we then introduce the financial management of the Metropolitan Model because in that model, we are able to evaluate a number of areas, functional areas, revenue management, asset management, liability management, goods and service distribution, goods issue around procurement, compensation for employees, transfer payments, and other general issues like and IT control. We look at the staff complements in various institutions, comparing the establishment to the number of vacancies and so on, so that we can see whether the institution is able to respond to the challenges that it faces. So this tool was meant to make sure a few important things. One, help us to get a better grip into what really are the issues the government are facing, at least in terms of what we pick up with the public information. We all understand that cultural issues also contribute, but it's very difficult to evaluate the cultural issues without evaluating the specific practices that are taking place, and then interpreting those then the future in the part of the country. So we are meant to do that. And the second thing, to empower institutions when they've used this tool to know for themselves what's going wrong. It was probably three questions, so it's a lot of questions. But for each one of the 583 questions, each and every question in the 583 questions, behind the question is a set of risks we say if this item is not solved, if this item is not dealt with, these are the likely negative consequences as a result thereof. And behind each one of those, we then suggest risk mitigation measures. Now, there is some control that can be put in place to deal. For all corporations, it's a question. That's how the model is designed. So an institution using this model will pick up that something is going wrong, but at the same time, can then interpret that when this goes wrong, these are the natural consequences, and this is how we can deal with it. So it's an empowering tool. Hence, our focus in the report that we use, that uses that. It analyzes questions at six levels, and I'll talk about the six levels. The biggest focus area is really at three levels. The startup level, the control level, compliance level, I think those are the terms that we'll talk about. That. And then once those levels have been complied with fully, we can then move on to the higher levels, which is information management and optimization, respectively. So all of these functional levels can tell us at what level is that institution operating in terms of its activities in relation to financial management. Now, this is just a quick description of the level. The first one we call it the startup level. In 2009, a number of new departments were established, amongst others, for instance, Department of Women, Economic Development, Department of Development, when those departments get promulgated and they announce departments, their institutions, the DG, that DG has got to employ people, that DG has got to put in place policies, that DG has got to have policies in everything. So it's an institution that the Delta has and there's nothing in the institution. You need to buy that, you need to head office, as basic as that kind of those type of things. Plus 11, where there's no proper internal control framework in the institution. Some institutions may have been existent for a while, but may have never matured beyond this point. The second level is the development level. I said control level, my apologies. That's where the institution begins to develop policies, begins to develop frameworks, employ staff, put an organogram and so on. You're developing the internal control framework, you put in the rules of the game for the institution. And the level above that is where those rules are being applied and being complied. So a lot of the emphasis in the maturity model is that if an institution can develop into these three levels fully, there should be no reason that institution is qualified for this role. If an institution develops from level 1 to level 3 and fulfills level 3 requirements, that institution is not yet qualified for this role. Now, to bring this thing properly to how the model works and how we support service delivery is that the level above that, because you have control, the information that you are generating from the activities in the institution has got integrity. You can rely on that information. Because that information is highly likely to be accurate, is highly likely to come to you in quickly. And level at that level is an information level where you are able to get information that makes sense and you can use that information in the next level, which is the management level, where you are now able to respond to the things that are taking up in the institution. You can make informed decisions. If you go through all of those five levels, you get to a level where the institution has so matured that you're not so much concerned about the day-to-day running, but you are saying, how do I extract the value for money in this institution? We all talk about South Africa being a state that is quite young compared to other countries. So at some stage in the future, we need to get to level 6. Although in various parts of the organization, you may be a different level. But overall, we need to get to level 6 ultimately. And that's the ultimate goal. And at that level, we will not be talking about purely just meeting the day-to-day requirements of service delivery. In fact, doing that smarter, doing that much quicker, doing that in a way that optimizes the use of resources so much better. So that's the model, conceptually. And the assessment of this model and the progress that has been made up until now. Let me move to the next slide. In this plan, as we use the model, we use the model more upfront before the audit process. And what we picked up 2010 a lot of institutions were sitting on average, if you just take it in average feature, institutions were sitting at 2.75. And then the improvement to 2.88, and all these are level three assessment issues. So in the level three, now at the upper end, when the institutions get to a point three, then those institutions are now moving into a point where we should not be getting the number of qualifications. And these are national departments. And what we see in national departments is that we're moving in this area, but when you look at individual departments, then you have problems. So the message here is, overall, we are seeing an improvement in the accountability space. We are seeing an improvement in the manner in which institutions are reporting the information. Yes, we do have very, very bad examples. And I will talk into that when I talk into that. And again, this slide talks to when we see the improvement in 2012, red bar, long bar on the left-hand side, talks to that improvement. And there was deterioration in 2011, but we didn't see much of the deterioration in 2012. But obviously, a department, for instance, like public works, the pitch had moved in the other direction in that department. And therefore, we see that there's some deterioration in a number of areas in that department. And while there are certain aspects that are still functioning properly. So again, this talks to the picture of improvement. This slide tells you the majority of the departments, where are they? Are they in the upper part of the level three or in the lower part? On the left hand side is the lower part. We've moved a lot of departments from the lower part to the mid part, which is between 2.71 and 2.97. So a lot of departments reside in that space at the current moment. So when you take an overall assessment, that's where you pick up a lot of departments. And then there's very few departments, and that's indicated where you're beginning to see clean audits. There's very few departments that are sitting on 2.98 to 3. And those departments are already beginning to do things that are in the information level. So they are able to use that information that they find in their institutions a lot more. If you think about it, taking each aspect of the functional area, asset management, there's been a huge improvement in the past few years in that space. But in asset management, we still have issues in the world of defense that need to be improved. We still have issues that need to be improved in public health. We still have issues that need to be improved. I think when Home Affairs, there's some of the issues that can happen. There's a few departments where you still pick up issues on asset management. But overall, you're picking up a trend that shows an improvement in the space. Compensation of employees. There's been huge improvements, but there's also issues of vacancies that come into the equation here. The general IT control, that part, I think we have to watch over a period of time, because it shows improvement here. And the point I didn't make about the assessment is that the information was more exact. I think the audit opinions, the audit reports are the only objective measure. This is a measure, but because it relies on the people within the institution, there is a degree, obviously, of information there that may be misleading. And in the area of general IT control, we are concerned that part might not give us a true reflection, but we monitor it on a regular basis. But there's a huge correlation between the overall picture that you pick up in this assessment with the audit report, which comes after the assessment that we have done. So it is reliable. Goods and services shows a lot of improvement. And this is the area in which I want to just spend a little bit of time. The procurement process works in this manner that if, for instance, you've got a big contract, will be for over 3 or 5 years. So decision is taken at a particular point in time. The impact of those decisions sometimes comes much later. So the assessment focuses on the activities in that particular year. And it suggests that at least the contract entered into in that particular year should impact the all probabilities that follow the processes that the department has set on itself. And those processes must be in line, obviously, with the activity. It suggests that. But when you look at things in totality, over a period of time, you will pick up that you still find a lot of corruption and challenges in government. And these have got specific times when they happen. And in each year, they may not necessarily be a lot of them, but they may be big in terms of the volume and all of those things. So when you see that picture, don't think that it's like just that there is no problem in procurement. There is a huge problem in procurement, which is the reason why we have established the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer in Treasury to make sure that we focus in this area. So but over time, 5 years, 10 years, as you pick up the trend in the analysis that the tool is providing, you should be able to then pick up those issues and be able to have an interpretation of those issues that is proper. So the point I'm making here is that the tool looks at a particular year, and a lot of the issues that we are dealing with are issues that cut across a number of years. In some instances, isolated specific institutions, like maybe very big departments, and not necessarily in every department in government. So that's the thing that we have to bear in mind as we deal with this. There are big challenges in procurement, there are big challenges, but the picture tells us is that there is improved compliance with the prescripts that we're picking up. And that improved compliance should, as we move forward, be helping us to turn the corner in some of these issues. If we continue to do the right thing, it should present to help us in that regard. On the liability management, one of the issues that we evaluate there are the issues relating to payment within 30 days of that. And there is still a problem in payment within 30 days. But over the past year or so, the COSAG took a decision that the directors general are going to monitor each other in this area. And there's work that's being done, very good work that's being done there by the presidency in monitoring this and getting departments to comply. So again, we're seeing a bit of improvement here. There are still elements, if you look at individual institutions, where there are problems. But overall, the picture is moving in the right direction. We have to get together to move with the good. Revenue management, there's been improvement in that space. Transfer payments, there's been improvement in that space. And in fact, in transfer payments, you shouldn't have expected to have problems in the first place because of its nature. But we did have problems. So the national average has been moving up in relation to complying with the regulations that the CSSA is talking about. So this model helps us to assess compliance with the legislation in one tool that is ongoing. But having done this, having said that we pick up this improvement, we still pick up that there are weaknesses. And we identify the businesses. Particularly in the area of goods and services, you find that some institutions do not document their processes and procedures, even though you've got the legislation that sort of prescribes certain things. They just rely on whatever prescribed in the legislation. They don't break it down so that they help the institution implement the legislation much better. So there is that problem. The high vacancy rate. Now, this is one area where when you pick up information, you get information that says that you do have some qualified people that are unemployed, but you do not have people being employed in various institutions. One needs to sort of understand what causes that. Who causes that now? Why aren't you able to pick up the position? Obviously, people have to be fit for a particular job. We haven't done any study to understand that. We do feel that, as a matter of fact, there are high vacancy rates in institutions. I can't go to the court to talk about. Sometimes things that are in the strategic plan and things that come out of the resolution that overtake. In the report that we send, at the end of the report, we sometimes identify things that we think FOPA could take a resolution on in order to improve and help us to make much more sense. If you go back, take the resolution that is implemented, and then look at the annual report. And I will use one. And the other one, you can get the government agreement from Public Service Commission. One of the resolutions that go back to for a number of years is that accounting officers where there are quality qualifications, the appointment agreement must include an item on the daughter's role, for the daughter. Now, come back and answer, you can ask all the accounts of that point in 2008 and see if that was in fact complied. I don't know. But it's an important measure to do. And then at the level that is available to the public is, do the accounting officers, when they write the annual report, address those outcomes, address the steps that they have taken to deal with those problems? Do they report to that? That again comes from the company body. So when you think of strategies and plans not being implemented, actually, as a committee, you can actually start with the resolution that you take as a committee that must be implemented by the institution. And see if those are actually implemented and in the table. So there is a sense that you find that there are strategies that are planned to deal with, but those that don't get the correctly implemented. As we deal with the capability model, we're able to pick up that information. We do pick up that some institutions, even though the tool has got the risk identified and the measures to deal them, they don't have a full appreciation of the risks and control that has been put in place. And interestingly here, even the sophisticated departments, by the way, the one that we look at as example in terms of good governance, when it comes to risk management, it doesn't mean that they don't do it, but the risk consciousness isn't fully there. They will do everything to manage it, but when you ask them about risk management, they say, no, that's not actually how to work. So that is always a problem. So this is an area in which we try to find ways of the treasury on how to improve that engaging other institutions even for that. Still, properly qualified people doing the jobs they are supposed to do is one of the things that we pick up in this assessment of the problem. And you can't expect somebody who is not trained as an accountant to do the job of an accountant. Sometimes institutions use, and it seems like, the chief financial officer is a strategic position, and they emphasize more the strategic position part and not the technical part. When in fact, the strategic contribution that the CFO brings to the party flows from the skills that he brings to the party. In the same way, you put eyes to see, but nose to smell, and mouth to eat. Different parts of your body do different functions. In an organization, you've got different role players to do different functions, and they have to be suited for that function. So what you find in the skills part is that sometimes people end up being chief financial officer and are occupying certain functions, but they are not properly qualified to do those jobs. And that's an area again that handbooks that the different authorities are going to look at. As the use of contractor for recruiting, for the carrying activity, the Auditor General issued a report in February or late January on the use of contractors. First, I was disappointed at the level of discussion that emanated from that report. Disappointed because we lost an opportunity to deal with the issue that the report is dealing with. The report is less about the extent of the use of contractors, but more about the fact that when we use these contractors, we are not even managing them. That's the key message in the report. That we use consultants in certain areas. If you do not have the right skills, if you've got vacancies, you may in fact end up using consultants. But the key problem is that when we use consultants, we are not managing them. We don't have proper terms of reference that guide the work of the consultants. And therefore, we should be careful not to focus so much on the fact that I'm spending 5 lines or 10 lines on consultants. But the issue is, the spend I'm paying for an employee that I've employed, does it give me what I expect from that employee? And the same argument, if I bring a consultant instead of an employee to do that function, does it yield the expected one? And that is the key question that we should concern ourselves with, rather than concern ourselves with the fact that the amount is too high. Yes, we have to make sure the amount is not too high in relation to what we're getting. In relation to what we're getting for that service. That service it is that in that relationship, deliverance, hospital, deliverance, medical services, in that relationship, deliverance, school books to schools, if it delivers houses to the poor, are we concerned about our people receiving the services the state has not to receive? Or are we concerned about who's bringing those services? So that's discussion for me, I think. It emphasized some things that I thought are important, are not critical in the context of the report. So when we talk about excessive use of contractors, yes, our biggest concern is not so much the excessive use, but the fact that we don't have control to manage these production properties. And we're looking at ways in which that part in the module can be so designed so that it actually reveals how the management of consumption comes into the equation. So that is the weakness that we are looking for. And systems to improve processes. By systems here, we're not talking computers. We're talking processes, procedures, and policies. We need to design mechanisms that can help us improve the trade, and we're not finding sufficient of that. So all what we're saying with this slide is that we could be improving compliance, we could be improving from the third level to information level very, very quickly if we were to address a number of these issues. And most importantly, address the cultural issue. I said earlier on that after every election, you find that the audit outcome tends to come down, even if it's a small. Local government sees the same picture. National provincial government sees the same picture. And part of the reason here is that with the new people coming on board, not because they are doing anything necessarily wrong, but they are eager to keep the road running. And emphasis is on more, hey, I want this thing done, I want this thing done. In fact, there's a way in which things get done. And that gets lost sometimes. And then people then start lying into the coaching and then the complaints begin to improve again. So we need to find a mechanism of dealing with the processes between elections into the new leadership that takes over the administration, so that even at that time you do not find that it, because it happens all the time, and we think that we need to find a way in which you smooth that up so that your improvement does not keep taking a step. I don't think it's very necessary to do.
I agree with you,
Professor. Each function just so that we can get to the question. The million rand question. What is the treasury doing? I think when we study, we must first make a big statement about the accountability framework. When we came to the CFMA, we said managers would manage and be held accountable. And the accountability process is such that within an institution, every treasury official is accountable to the Director General of the National Treasury, who is accountable to the minister. And the minister is accountable to the same story with all our institutions in relation to the resources that they have. Having said that, Section 6 of the PFMA puts certain responsibilities on the Treasury. Section 18 of the PFMA puts certain responsibilities on the Provincial Treasury. And those responsibilities are very, very specific. They do not impact responsibilities in Section 38, from Section 38 to Section 45 of the PFMA, which talks about the responsibilities of accounting officers. So with that understanding, the extent that their responsibilities in Section 6, and these are the things that we've been doing. With the financial capability control board, once we've done the assessment, we then sit with the department and say, these are the weaknesses that we've identified. These are the things that must be done to sort out these weaknesses. These are the things that we will do as the federal. These are the things that you will do as the department. We agree on those things. We sign on that agreement. And then we monitor implementation on that. So part of the improvement that we're picking up in some institutions, it comes directly from that process of putting each other accountable. So the strategic support plans and corrective plans that we put in place for our institution are meant to make sure that we respond to the weaknesses that we find. We also understand that without the leadership, political leadership as well as administrative leadership, understanding their responsibilities, appreciating their responsibilities, you are not going to find these corrective plans being implemented properly. And therefore, we've got a guide to accounting officers, we've got a lot of framework documents relating to various aspects and functions that the federal does, internal audit framework, management framework, and we've worked on the capacity building initiative. And all of those documents are meant to make sure that you create an understanding at leadership level of the responsibility. Recently, we've been developing a document that seeks to address the executive authority in relation to what the executive authority ought to do within that department on the request of the minister. We in the final stage of finalizing that document. And again, it will address that issue of ensuring that at leadership level, the executive authority will know what their role ought to be in relation to the things that are happening in the department. Mr. General, on the 12th of this month, when he issued the first statement, amongst the things talked about is that executive authorities ought to assume a more hands-on approach. Now, our role is to help define what that hands-on approach means. Mm-hmm. And that document seeks to do that, so that we complement each other in terms of the things that we do. Finally, in capacity and skills, we've developed a course development strategy. We've developed different courses. We've approved certain courses. We've got about 34-35 courses that have been approved to date. Those courses are informed by the work that we did in developing a competence framework, developing learning framework, developing dictionary issues that helps define what the various functions need in government. And that work has been done, and what the strategy we work with Parliament to deliver all these things and approve some of the service providers. Look at the work that the service provider wants to provide citizens and then advise Parliament accordingly. Our risk management unit developed a tool that helps institutions train their own people in risk management, and you don't need somebody to sit with you. You can go through the framework and then you can go through this electronic tool on the system and answer certain questions of risk management. It helps train you and help you understand risk management issues. It's available to help you. In the supply chain management space, we have responded late 2009 with establishing the multi-agency working group and reports of that in the past. The multidisciplinary and multi-institution structure that tries to bring the various elements of government, including FIU, which are generally the invited party, FIC, and so on, to try and understand some of the issues and the dynamics around supply chain so that they can respond quicker. And then please report it in terms of the anti-corruption task team. But most recently, we've established the procurement office in the Treasury, and we actually put somebody who's in charge of that is doing some work in relation to the supply chain. The areas that we identified in supply chain, the minister talked about in the budget. That one of the key things, if you just pull a few things around supply chain, what goes off, is that there are too many places and too many places in an institution where decisions are made, procurement decisions are made. And therefore, that each place where procurement decision is made is an opportunity for people to lobby the person making the decision, and an opportunity for the unscrupulous person making the decision to take advantage of those that are lobbying. So it creates opportunity for untoward behavior. And we think that's not the right thing. And the chief of the to look into that and find ways in which to create a little bit more certainty and eliminate the proliferation of decision-making costs and reduce the number of times the decisions are made over a period of time, maybe 2 years or 3 years, that kind of an approach. Because you then create certainty in the market around some of these areas. But you enhance the capability of government to monitor the time those decisions are made, when they have got fewer bits those decisions are made, and fewer times those decisions are made. So, at a conceptual level, that's the work that the Chief Procurement Officer has got to contend with, over and above ensuring that we monitor, we increase our monitoring. The work that we did in the supply chain in the multi-agent working group told us that if we can improve our monitoring capability, we should be able then to improve the situation on the ground. We're not going to eliminate everything, but at least we can make a dent. We also have a unit that helps with investigation, called Special Audit Services, supports the corruption institutions with devices and so on, and teams with the anti-corruption task team. So it does investigation, both access to the police, to the law enforcement agencies that law enforcement take over, and get fed back to the institutions, so the institutions can take this another action. We established the Public Service Community Forum was launched a few years ago, and it has begun to do a bit of work. This is the area in which the theme of the Public Service Community Forum is that it should be possible for ordinary citizens to serve in a structure that is called the Public Committee in government, so that they can bring that perspective around certain delivery issues that they face. But in order for them to do that properly, you need to empower them. And the Public Sector Community Forum is designed to do just that. At an elementary stage, doing a lot of the direct hard work at the moment, formulating the various materials that we have to do. And once all of that is done properly, we're going to begin to run workshops across the country so that people can come and participate. And then once they've participated there, we can then make them able to participate in the working committees and then broaden the participation in the full spirit of a democratic process where ordinary people can participate fully and help in their accounting officers utilizing our constitution. We developed the CFO handbook, realizing that some of the CFOs may need help in this area so that they can understand their functions, the link of their functions to various other things in government. From a reporting point of view, to ensure that you receive a report here that is credible. We've got the departmental reporting framework. We continuously improve the framework with the consulting the Auditor General so that it's possible for the auditors to audit what you are presiding. We still take responsibility for the framework. We've introduced interim financial statements. Over time, I would want to see not full financial statements, but management accounts that you begin to prepare things on a monthly basis. That's able to give the information about the controlled environment, and that is not happening. At the moment, we do this through the interim financial statements on a quarterly basis. And some of the improvement, I think, comes from the fact that all of these innovations combined are able to drive that. In the era of procurement, the content management framework has also been revised and introduced. We're hoping the chief procurement officer, once he finalizes some of his work, there might be still some work to be done in this area. The financial management capability authority model continuously will pick up areas I spoke about one day around the managing the consultant. Each time we pick up those nuances as we analyze the information, we find areas of improvement that we're going to do, and that is going to constantly do. So, in conclusion, Chair, it's been a long the results indicate that there are improvements, but we see that good set of challenges that need to be sorted out in financial management. It also indicates that you need the right tool at the right time. It doesn't help when, whether by mistake or some casual statement comes from a very senior person, an accounting officer, or a respect for authority that says the legislation is not helping. I think when we've got a problem with certain aspects of the legislation, we need to consider revising those aspects. But the right tone at the right level, we should encourage people to comply with the legislation. We should never find people at senior level questioning the legislation when in fact they own the legislation. So the tone at the right level is important. When an accountant officer comes before Hooper and says, I could not follow that procedure because it's taking too long. The question is, are you the only accountant officer that has to comply with this particular provision? Why is it not taking too long in other institutions? And there are ways in which legislation has got to be implemented that helps that. We will continue to provide support, but support relies heavily on the institution, and this is one of the things that we put in the agreement, that we will support you if you employ the people that we're going to transfer things to. If you do not have people that we're going to transfer things to, that support is not going to happen. We've got only so many people that work in the treasury, and we've got close to 1,000 institutions in government. So in 3 to 5 days, even if you work every day, you are not going to be at every institution to happen. So support can work if the institutions themselves provide skills so that they can be helped. So the owners land those charges come into responsibility. And that means the treasury has got to do what it says it's got to do. It's got to do the monitoring that it's got to do. It's got to provide capacity. It's got to enforce the education. But also, the account officer has got to discipline the wrong people and not move them to other positions. The executive authority has got to discipline the wrong doers and not move them to other positions without the disciplinary process that we take and bring. Disciplinary process is that the institution should not be dropped without any good reason. Go through the process. If you feel that the process hasn't done anything wrong, can you go through the process and conclude the process and let our first objective say Freeman and the investigating team was met or the internal auditors were met to pick up that particular issue. There's actually not an answer one here. So it's important that those tasks with responsibility, discharge that responsibility appropriately. And it goes, of course, with all the organs of state in relation to matters that they need to deal with. In order to make an impact here, we should at least begin to test the legislation in other areas as well. And if not testing the legislation, we may not make a difference. So it is the responsibility of every government official to ensure adequate financial management in order that fair service deliver the objectives of each government department and for the citizens of the country. We are not talking about this because we have a profession to protect. We are talking about good financial management because I'm an accountant. I talk about financial management because with good financial management comes credible information to those that make decisions, and they can make informed decisions about how much services can be used at what phase and in what area. Without information, that cannot happen. So financial management say, will not work. We're talking financial management in order so that the loss of our people can be improved, so we improve service delivery. And we think there is a case to be made for good financial management in support of service delivery. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, I'm sure
that it is very sometimes in difficult in terms of a committee member of the focus if you decide trying to go into the strategic plan and outcome of the department. That's a financial reporting of a department. I don't know the support that we could get, because what is tied as this committee to invite a portfolio committee that should sit in that meeting if one thing that department to try and check what is it that we can kind of combine as a portfolio committee. So in that relation, because you raise the issues of service delivery, which are very critical, we've got five areas which is administration, the other administration three things to think that one needs to achieve this by the end of the term. But now when you check your financial management of different departments as well as correctly put and so find that it doesn't go to the line of that that is supposed to go. In relation also to the legislation and the compliance, but also in relation also with the issue of accounting officers which are not able. This week you have one accounting officer who knew you deal with something that happened 2 years previously, there was somebody else, and that person is unable to account, even though the discretion says, as an accounting officer should be able to answer for those questions. So you find that as proper, being frustrated, to try and crack into the big issue. But however, in terms of the resolutions that you take, we recommend to Parliament, it's something like also, how do you track those resolutions? How are they implemented in terms of the department that you raised? But also in terms of the timing, when you track those resolutions, the implementation part of it, whether the various authorities want to do that, in relation with your audit committee, in relation with your internal audit, those are the issues which I think maybe we need to try and look how do we solve those issues. I think, Catherine, I wanted to raise those issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the presentation. It's a pleasure engaging with people from the Treasury at this level. Can you take the message back? The Treasury to your minister that we want this level of representation, not particularly these individuals, but at this level in future. Some of the people who have from Treasury have been very, very difficult to engage with, and some of them get into that. But please, if you could ensure that message is submitted to your department. Chair, you reminded me when you spoke about refresher courses on the PSMA. You see, research are largely self-trained and self-taught. And we must educate you guys with a very high level of regular training. And the suggestion I want to make, maybe I should be making it when at the end of the year we plan our strategy for the next part. The suggestion I would like to make then is that we have this kind of training extended. The finance committee, members of the WA committee, then the formal, regular, ongoing training that we then have. Proper engagement with all the communities when we meet you. Chair, the question I wanted to ask, I have two questions. You mentioned performance agreements, and you suggested that resolve court outcome should be part of the performance agreement. Why not go a step further and make it a requirement that achieving these audits is a part of that performance agreement? Or milestones to achieve a clean audit. But that to go further than simply correcting what went wrong. And then, what is the value of this performance team? So what? If I don't meet what I said I promised to meet in my performance team, what happens? What are the consequences? Then, on page 14, you identify negative treatment. You have a list of weaknesses there. Page 14 of your presentation. The most important one is missing, I think. And you mentioned it earlier. Lack of consequences, constant non-compliance. You don't mention that there. Why? We had public works here last week. And they've only been able to find around 28% of the disability issues. And some of the very serious investigations regarding fraud and corruption. Only 28% of the 5 years.
So is this lack of consequence? People know that they can get away with these things. That's why these misdemeanors are repeated and repeated and repeated. And I think my final question is, again talking of consequences, on page 3 of one of the presentations of this other defense of the letter, report, I think it's on page 3 there, there are 12 out of 39 departments which do not respond to invitations before they go server. The A, then, would that not affect the very positive print you have now put on the results of your survey when one third of departments did not take off? And I also want to know, coming back consequence, what are you going to do with the department? Like it's public work. Again, it doesn't bother to be part of your server. With no response as to why that is, what consequence? What consequences are there not only for individuals but for departments? At what point does Treasury say, no, we've had enough? Again, public work. Another disclaimer. Over 1,000% increase in their irregular expenditure. You must know that. But you allow it to go on year after year. At what point do you say, there are standards? What point do you say, no, this can go no further? My question is largely, I think, around the consequences for this thing at an individual level and at that department level.
Thank you, Dr. George. Me, I'm Dr. George. I'm getting one before we get overwhelmed by the question. Dr. George?
Thank you, President. The Honourable aims to start off on asking about this model where 12 government parties do not participate. And I do think it will obviously have an impact on the scoring. But I think more specifically on page number 5, there's mention on self-assessment. Now, what I'd like to know is how this model works, because given that 3 seems to be the number that would be a more or less acceptable number, the departments that have self-selected one another or themselves are actually scoring below 3. So generally, it's not more acceptable. So that's the thing about the model. I'm wondering whether it's valid or not. Because I do agree there's a positive spin on it. And then I wanted to also ask about the very last sentence in the conclusion, where it says it's also imperative that executives on this report, so the letter that we got, it is also imperative that executive authorities acquaint themselves with administrative challenges of facing departments under control to hold their account officers responsible. Now, you did mention that it's about the Honourable Anthony mentioned public works, but the Minister of Public Works told us last week, that the CFO can be somebody, I don't know his name, but I'll discuss, and was given a choice of leaving the department or facing the consequences, and then she left. And I was very interested to know if she's somewhere in the public sector, somewhere, doing what she did to inside of the group, and I don't know. But there isn't any accountability. And you seem to be saying that in this long line. And I know it's a very hard question, but so what? We know this. When is the hospital strong? And then I will ask a final question to the House General. I believe that you're leading the Service of Treasury. Is that true and have you been replaced? Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you give us enough questions? They're doing too quick. I thought the chair was asking me to ask that question. Well, usually I cannot answer. I think the issue of the interaction between the portfolio committee and corporate and issue that the content that got continue raising and begin to make it work with the committees that way it works. Because some committees will find it worthwhile, some committees might have different take. But if you ask me, I think almost all of the documents that are brought here is relating to oversight responsibilities. We always emphasize that at some point you need that intervention. You don't want to go for dealing with them in our issue, but you want that the intersection be there, because when I pick up on the financial management side, actually, I always say that the finances are a reflection of what's happening in the service delivery in general. Departments that have bad service outcomes, when you look at the service delivery record, it's always a question mark. So it is important that alignment and it's a matter that I think COFA and the members have to continue engaging with until there is missing of mind in relation to that. An important thing, accounting officers that have left the department, there's a few scenarios. This was a question that Kevin Park presented in COFA. Session, I think nobody takes this around about September. And this question was raised very sharply there. There's a few scenarios. The kind of officer that leaves and he goes outside to the private sector, you can't continue with this night process, it's not right, because it's not your employee. But there are areas where in misdemeanors the kind of officers may have committed. Those misdemeanors may in fact be a criminal in nature, financial misconduct. And we say in the legislation for financial misconduct, you've got to face a jail term. The legislation is very specific. So you need to go through a process that determines whether that sanction ought to be imposed or not. You can't just decide on this thing without having gone through that exercise. So we should bring back those accounting officers. Now, if that's the question, and I don't have an answer, but if that's the question, when we know that an accounting officer has actually committed financial misconduct, and like that, you just have got to look back in the past 6 years. When accountants left the department and there have been issues that are highly questioned, and if you read about settlement, instead of a process that first says, is there criminality or no criminality? And then coming down the line, you learn that, in fact, there was a report available that suggests that, in fact, criminal action should have been taken. And it's something that I think it goes back to the question of consequences that we don't seem to find consequences. For example, of the person that was investigated, and the investigation, and they feel like within the public space, and the investigation has indicated that this person has in fact committed financial misconduct. And there's a process in one department to deal with this person, and then this person gets shifted to another department. Now, this brings me to the same point. And I can't also that get moved from one department to the other. In terms of the Public Service Act, as long as you've got a certain number, the case that you had, that you had to answer for in another institution, you can brought back from wherever you are to that institution to deal with that. The legislation has not had anything so. We are not using it. It is not adequate if it is ever being used at all. So, these are difficult cultural issues, I think, that we've got to confront. It's easy when you've got a headache to ask for a penalty. It's very difficult to realize that you've got a headache because you constantly do things that lead to a headache for you. You don't get enough sleep. You drink things that take your liquid from your body too much and you end up. So changing that behavior, which leads to the headache, is an important element. And therefore, While I agree that at times we need to discipline people and all of those things, we need to improve regulatory framework and all of those things. There's a lot of evidence that suggests that a lot of the problems that we have are because we don't take action when we're supposed to take action. I don't have an answer to that. When an executive authority does not take an action, when a county officer does not take an action, it's very difficult from where I'm sitting. Much for that, except bringing back to the attention of the government. So it's something that I think we need to think as a government. How to respond to that? How to respond to the situation at the level of consequence? when there are question marks, when there are question marks that have not been answered, and we take a decision to give that person a job as an accountant in a direct environment, or if the position is an accountant, it makes that difficult. And some of those decisions are decisions that you will appreciate as a committee that you can't have an accountant general as a result. Let alone an official to an accountant. So the part around consequences is something that I think requires an engagement at this committee level, other committees of parliament, at the executive level in government, that needs to be addressed. And I think that goes to the question that's another point you raised. But to the extent that there's an action that ought to be taken, and at least there's still some action that the treasurer has got to take. We want then hold the treasurer accountable. We can't hold a treasurer accountable for the net consequences, but for the steps the treasurer has to take in order to at least ensure that somebody is alerted to that issue, then the treasurer will have to act. For instance, Chapter 4 of the treasurer regulation, which deals with the Chapter 10 of the FMA, talks to some of the things that the treasurer does. And in the new regulation, we can to refine that as well. And to the extent that we can do that, we have to do that, we've got no option. But the point that worries me around the people acting with impunity is that it's reflected in other areas. I mean, it was reflected, for instance, in the Eastern Cape media, that the accounting officer of the Deputy Municipality was trying to deal with the people that the committee has submitted the contract to that municipality. What happened? That accounting officer is out of job. No, it's in the municipality. It was reported in the media in the municipality. And the local structure has got nothing to do with running a municipality made a decision that this cannot happen. Now, when you raise the question of no consequences, I think we also need to confront those dynamics. Because there's only so much as an official I can do. And I will leave it there. I will leave that one as that. The question about performance agreements that I think in general has high frequency. That's one of the things that ought to be influenced. But the resolution was a COPA resolution. And we will, when we send our cabinet report later in the year, put that as a recommendation for cabinet to take. Because also that was a cabinet resolution. It was not just a COPA, it was also a cabinet resolution. So we will again put that actually. Not that it is a conflict of actually, a clean administration. You know, Section 36, 37 of the FMA says that all of the responsibilities that are given to a high officer in charge of the FMA must be part of the accounting officer's government agreement. So, essentially, already, clean hold is preserved by the legislation. But obviously, we need to make sure that we tie that proper. The credibility. The credibility of the two levels of the question credibility of the person in charge. One, because some departments do not respond. The better of the departments do not respond, and so on. Yes, that will dilute the result. And I think in my input I kept saying that for the public work would pull the things down. But at another level, the issue of credibility is about people actually responding to this question concern. Either we do the assessment up front, and we also campaign, and there's been a correlation between the two. So that tells us that the degree of honesty has improved in relation. But when we do the assessment, we also ask them to tell all the job departments to verify the work that has been done by the people assessing themselves. There is a bit of an evaluation of whether people are responding adequately. Of course, the general audit is still part and parcel of the department, although they are supposed to be objective and independent. And we don't think they are not independent. We think they are. They do exercise their duties independently. But they are still part and parcel of the system within the department. So our measure of the credibility of these results is the audit outcome. And we've been finding a very close correlation between what the results are objective and what you're finding. Yeah, I so I think the positive spin is not just a positive spin. It's in fact a reflection of what is happening on the ground. Yes, I want to emphasize our institution thinks that the future now. And the future will change when you bring this other institution that will respond to this. I think I've dealt with questions Dr. Rose relating to the very authority one. In my impression, three are our consequences. And the other question I'm dealing with is just keep rate. But Michael is here, for instance, is an indication of breaking up the office, and I said there will be another test with the deputy of the accounting statement. So the work in the office has been increasing, and we now picking up that office so that not only you have an accountant general, but you also have two people that are the affiliates of the accountant general to make sure things forward. One, because they are willing to help the load, but at the same time, manage those issues should that eventually occur.
I'm sure the president
will
come Okay, Dr. Ravi Ramamayana Boshi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lombardo, thank you so much. I think that's a very sound and recent submission. I'd like to ask you, you mentioned the Specialized Audit Services Unit. Do you have enough capacity within this particular unit to really to do all the forensic investigations, what they should do, or are they still understaffed? And then the second part of my question is asset management. Is it possible to set deadlines for some departments to comply or complete their particular asset registers and so forth? The Department of Public Works, and I think one of the Honourable Minister or the Honourable Deputy Minister said that they do not have a full register of assets within this particular department. I'd just like to have the views there because I think it's very important that departments get a full representative registered. That's why we find that some departments are not really renting their services as they should be. Thank you, Chair.
I'm still going to ask the company general. Same question I asked you in Clemson Park. Whenever this department intervene, their CFO, remember I said they should call me so that he should be there and help them to say, no, this person is not qualified to do the job. Oh, this person was in another department. He can't really come into this department. You know, it worries me where we think the law has got a long arm. But somewhere the arm is so short that it can't even pull an end where it is. But somewhere it's so long that it will still go under the water, over the mountains, very looking for you, just to have a protected you. Maybe a minor thing, but the way we are being saying that if this money was used for this, it would have been better, but nothing is being done. And you can see that this person really is still going to do the same thing. I mean, in my language, they say the finger that is being used for licking, it will continue doing that job. It knows how to come next to the mouth. So, the other thing is the issue of the questions that are answered by law, or sometimes they are under pressure, especially when we're asking a question. You know, you feel that you repeat the same question over and over, but you will never get an answer from them. They come and say, you remind them that, remember last year we asked you the same question, the same report that the auditor general is giving us, we did ask you this question. And you're guidedly around it. You don't know how to answer it. Either they keep quiet and they come with a story that Shivani says, I only came 26 days ago, like the gentleman next to you. I wasn't there when Mr. Nombalo was there. So this happened during his time. Those are some of the things that I want to ask. Even if they you came in, you wanted just to put the puzzle overall on and continue doing whatever is supposed to be done. But you will never get a clear answer on that. So those are the questions that I really want to come. I understand you when you say sometimes you must meet and ask them not about the money, but about the service delivery. We are trying to do that because you can see what is happening, like you are saying now. We know that man was fired just because he wanted people to be fired or to be punished. And it's very simple to say, you have used 5 months, please bring it back, okay, we'll change this way. But when the person gives what you are saying, go to the next department, nothing happens. It wasn't up to. So what is it that you're supposed to do? The consultant issue. We do ask them, we are not only worried about them transferring skills to the people. We do tell them that we want them to transfer those skills that leave them in the department so that the department can continue. But if they come and collect money, we also worried about the money that they are receiving. Because the same money should have been paid to the person in the department who could have helped them. This person. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
They will be temp on making sure that they have the department accountable and so on. Unlike wait for a year and almost towards the second year, that's where you first see. I'm talking to the government. You know that the first 1-2 years, it was, you know, a little bit of a learning curve. And when we thought we were held on, some patches bring new faces, which again you require to build the capacity. And those things that don't have, you know, the talent to, you know, achieve what they intended for the end of the day. So I thought actually just mark on that. As I said, at the interview of that, the presentation to me was a thought-provoking, you know, presentation. Therefore, it is an F. Issues that require at some stage to be looked into when we plan for a sustainable kind of an oversight by Parliament to, you know, the entities in the story of Parliament. Having said that, Chair, I'm sure we can understand and agree that Section 86 of the TFMA will remain as it is in the document. But maybe we should check if doesn't we require to be specific to say the failure by the accounting officer or official or whoever. It cannot be left to say it's a criminal offense, needs to be done, but I think somewhere we should say who is responsible to open a case. Because if I said specifically it's about the opinion. It's not about that the law is not there. The law is there, but it is like either the minister or the MEPs or the board of whatever that is supposed to do their work, that they are not sure whether should they walk into the police station and say, here I am, I've been touched in terms of law with this particular MEP, but things have not happened as per, you know, Section 38, the 940, and so on and so on. Because it's spoke to several, you know, sections. And to say, failure to implement, you have to be, you know, reported and be prosecuted about it. But what is worrying me and what is somehow seems to be lacking as an uncertain? I do know that the opposition parties at some stage, you will hear them say, we are walking to the police station and we are going to open a case. But never today. Seen, you know, a clear indication of outcome, consequences that you have opened a case and then the case has been prosecuted positively. Therefore, it says, to me, it tells me that maybe we should talk to, considering the amendment, to speak to people who are empowered in terms of law to work and do that particular, you know, open your case. Obviously, we do understand that both the president and the cabinet are individually and collectively accounting to, you know, Parliament and the people of the public of Parliament. But one way or another, the statement sounds to be very good, but when coming to hear the implementation, that's why then you wanted to ask questions. And when you ask questions, one will then say, but the law is there, including the constitution, which we, I'm sure you know that individually and collectively, it's what is in the constitution. But the question is, why are we not doing this thing? We agreed that you see that things that are becoming very naked at some stage. That here you don't even need an investigation, you know, to be taken further than where you are. For government speech, when the minister last week ahead, you said, informed you that he said you have got a choice. You choose to go or we are going to that part matter. It should not be given, you know, to say you go or not. The minister has been walking to the police station and said, here it is. This person should be then taken to town. But you know, what when things happen, they will agree with them, Chair. It might be, yes, there are areas that obviously the accounting general said it won't be, you know, enough and fair for anyone today. No, I couldn't comply because this law is difficult for me to that's an excuse that will never take. But every day we are hearing this excuse. Are they just saying that they are justifying the amendment of this particular piece of legislation? Because for us to keep on hearing this excuse, which we are unable to overpass the challenge that are holding on us, I think it's something that requires a serious review and then possible your amendment, which will become real implementable in terms of, you know, tangible way of doing things rather than just narrating and talking like politicians, politicians in a way to face, you know, the 2014.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to do a quick follow-up on the Mokoshi and then ask my question. But on the question of amendments, if the AG can tell us if there are any amendments that are being submitted to the PFMA, say for 12 years now, is it all hunky-dory or are there any amendments being proposed and if so what? And secondly, does Treasury have, or can Treasury have within itself a unit that could assist departments like on the Mokoshi saying where? If a department wants to take an individual stop in a criminal prosecution, now the police won't do their work, that's what happened on Mokoshi. We walk to the police station to report that thing, the police won't do anything because they don't understand these things. You've got to give it to them on a plate, you know, the actual charge, the act and everything else. Because preparation of the charge is more important than appearing in court. So can Treasury not have in itself a unit that would assist a department or an accounting officer to prepare charges in terms of non-criminal so that these charges can stick in court. So that's just a follow-up. But I think my question, Chairperson, relates to what the AG said, the million rand question he said, is what is Treasury doing? Now, for me, this begs the question, what capacity does Treasury have to do? Are there any challenges within Treasury to do what they should be doing? I mean, you said there are so many departments out there and so on and so forth. Are there some sort of challenges within Treasury itself? Because when one looks at municipalities, and you know, we colleagues here, we've been focusing more on national departments. I mean, what's happening in municipalities is really a disgrace in terms of lack of financial management and aging proportions. What capacity exists? I know it's one of the functions of National Treasury to work with municipalities to facilitate, but is it not that working at that level? Secondly, Chairperson, in hearing here, we've heard about Limpopo, for example, we hear about the misuse or, should I say, abuse of variation orders. The PFMA makes provision for violence, 8%, not more than 8%, and so on and so forth. But when it comes to variation orders where you can vary within the scope of the original contract, you find this gross departure from the scope of work that was originally set at home. Now, the question is, where is Treasury in all of this? When departments grossly, you know, ignore all the Treasury regulations, etc. And lastly, has Treasury and the Office of the Auditor General sat down consider more performance audits rather than regularity audits? I think the AG mentioned in slide 7, and I agree with you, looking at more than financial facts. But I am quite sure if AGSA has the human resources and the financial resources, they can move into this really, really important area of value for money audits. And can there not be some kind of box pricing so that the office of the AG can be given money to deal with the performance?
Sorry, Chairperson, let me start with Honourable Dr. Arthur Fashion. We have enough capacity in and I think with the question that came. Okay. In the special court service. There's a two things to say. First is the philosophical point. When you got the amount of work that we have to do,
you face the question of saying, to what extent do you build capacity to deal with these issues? When thinking that these issues ought to be finite in nature, they, you've got to turn the corner at some point on these issues. So do you build your capacity in a way that suggests that these issues will determine in the future? And as a result, you create a really bloated structure. You know, governments are always accused of rebuilding these structures. And to what extent do you create the balance? Hence, the point around sometimes you use the concept. At what point do you create the balance between building a critical mass that is sufficient to, that ought to be sufficient to deal with the issues, and then leverage on the existence of things elsewhere? And you couple that with the question, you may have that structure, because creating a structure is easy. You feed, you warehouse, you resource study everything, and you can create the structure, and try to build your 1,000 people. And then the question is, are you going to find 1,000 people, even what you pay, and what you have what you pay in the private sector to fill that structure completely. So that question is that the answer to the question that you asked is that we've got a certain level of capacity that we have in Benin. We've deliberately taken a view that we are not going to be able to deal with everything. So we're going to deal with certain items based on some criteria that we have. And then to the extent that there's an overlap of matter that we can't deal with immediately, we then use private sector resources to help us deal with the constraints that we may have. So in relation to the special resources, that is the deliberate approach we've taken, that we need to build a self-sufficiency point. But given the nature and the size of the investigation, we're never going to be able to have all of those things together. And then we supplement that with the private sector, Setting deadlines on asset management, yes. We can set deadlines. Everybody at the moment is supposed to have a good asset sector. So the deadline has been there and has been set and compliant with it. But I'm coming back to the capacity questions that have come up so that I can give all of them at the same time. is the treasure we have insufficient people to deal with the work that he's got to do? The treasure is starting to look at it has grown tremendously over the past 10, 11 years. It has grown quite considerably. But do you still want to grow it better? Is the question. I think we need to think differently. Because the area of work where we've got problems is in the area of procurement. We need to think differently about how we intervene, how we deploy the resources we have in the treasury in making a meaningful intervention in the procurement. I think once the procurement officer has done some work, there are some costs that left. As an example, SAS did not have to have a lot of people to improve the compliance, of course they employed a lot of people to improve the level of compliance, check compliance in the country. The success they have is less to do with the number of people they have and more to do with the amendment initiative, because the number that they have. So we need to design a way in which we deploy ourselves that creates that leverage. And those are the things that we're dealing with. We do have sufficient capacity to deal with things that we have to deal with, but if we have to deal with everything completely, then we need a lot more bigger structure. And I don't think that is the answer. I think the answer lies in deploying ourselves in a way that creates the impact that we need, and then we make the sufficient push back. Coupled, of course, with the question, if you can see a very big structure, if the questions we were talking about earlier relating to the culture issues and the consequences that are not happening, which have to happen outside of the treasury anyway, then you have a problem. Then there was a question around, can treasury assist departments in preparing charges? Preparing charges is the duty of the police. But in the context of the multi-agency working group, in the context of the anti-corruption campaign that is led by the Department of Justice, the president is an invited party because part of the work that we do in the social service services is for an investigation. And that work feeds into the work the police are doing and other enforcement agencies. So we have created an administrative link between the work the police are doing in matters that affect government and work that we're doing as a treasurer, so that the police will have sufficient information and credible information at their disposal to formulate the action. And depending on how the police, what approach the police take in formulating the charges and so on, we may or may not have any approach to that. But the work that becomes part and parcel of what they consider in formulating charges, we participate in that, at least the police in the actual country. Now, we get invited by various departments into this, or we take certain matters to court within the law. So there's various forms that give us the information that we need. It could be whistleblowers, it could be department that comes to us, it could be issues that come in through the budget monitoring process that we pick up and then decide to follow up. So the question about when a failure came, I think is an important one. Then there was an issue around the, I think the honorable coach, the issues, the comments that you're making are welcome. I will not repeat them. If it goes back to the capacity issue, there are departments that invite them when they have interviews of chief financial officers. Obviously, if there are two departments on the same day, I might not be in both sessions. Even on one day, I may be in another meeting. But what we've done in most meetings, when we are invited to participate in that process, we would identify a chief financial officer in another department that will take account of the case. Or depending on the level of the person that's being interviewed, either myself or any of my staff members participating in that process. But we only do that by invitation. Whether we can, in fact, influence the decision entirely and have a much bigger way in that process is a different matter of interest. And then there's a question around the Bureau of Variation Order and where is the decision from. I think it goes back to the million-dollar question. In as far as the state in procurement, I think the realization by the Minister of State comes and establishes the Chief Procurement Office. Let's refocus the work that we're doing on our monitoring and evaluation of the procurement process in government and the enforcement measures that we put in place. I think it's a realization that we are lacking. We have not been effective. It's a realization that we've not been effective in that space and we need to tighten up our process. So I'm hoping that with the increased capacity that is coming with the Chief of the Establishment. And the guys affecting our daily conversation with him yesterday, talking about which area we need to bring up the customer store, he's already immersed himself with the responsibility of trying to build an appropriate and establish capacity to deal with the issue. Before coming to this meeting, he could be dealing with another man and is asking the question, how do we deal with that man? What kind of intervention are we going to do? For me, this begins to say, let's give that process an opportunity and see to what extent it pushes. Having said that, I want to caution, not that I'm stuck record. Once the work of the Chief Procurement Officer is done, and the guys in my office around the special resources service and recommendations have been put on the table for the responsibility to have the power in law to take certain action, it is incumbent upon those have to take the necessary action. So the question we're talking about in relation to consequence, the lack of consequence, will still be a question in the government. So if you put these processes in place, we're going to get to a point where we've got an answer to the question of lack of consequence. Because without that part being answered, all of these other efforts, their impact will only be limited. They will make a positive impact. They will definitely make a positive impact. But that impact will be limited, highly constrained by an environment where there are no consequences. I think the first question I have dealt with all of the questions.
was that one related to capacity and the municipality of quality? Well, there is a unit in the church for the question, is there a unit? There is a unit in the treasury. We used to call it technical assistance unit, which works close to the current general. I think we call it now. We call it government technical assistance component. It's been designed in the past year, and the person who take over that new responsibility, the defined responsibility, is coming in the that work in the, on the rest of the day. So there is work that's being done in that space. There has been work that is done there. We are increasing our involvement in that space, ensuring that it becomes effective. There are amendments that you in the CFMA. You will recall that in 2008, the CFMA can cut on the door about and then we have work that began with the unionists around the market and working group and forward on procurement. And we felt that a new team that come out of that exercise that will necessitate that basic legislation wants to be put this up. So yes, there will be amendments to the CFMA. I think we are getting to a point now because what has had effect was wanting to see and understand more deeper some of the issues around the procurement. There are things that we need to bring into legislation, other legislation, and I think we're getting to a point where we should be able to make that determination and what those amendments ought to be. But there are issues that are sitting on our board that we can take.
Just say we know.
can you specify the department in the next the reason we did not do it in this report was that we were questioned about the integrity of some of the information that we had. It was given as a picture, but then point and then pin that the particular department would have been problematic without the information being defined. So we'll be able to do that going forward. No, again, those people have not get jobs and how could you start throwing stones at the Western City because they'll say our demand has said they must be getting employed. No. I actually need to say when there are serious reservation of a candidate. In fact, fortunately, some departments tend to run them for the short term. They will send the shortlist if I'm participating in that process. I don't have to be in the process. But if I'm participating in that process, they will tend to send the shortlist. And the general minister said, you can do this. I want the shortlist sent to the Attorney General before I even consider it. And in the shortlist, I will say, sorry, this particular individual, you may like the person, you may have been referred to you, it's not properly qualified. So even if that I don't know, just looking at the communication, I will say, this person is not properly qualified for the job. These communications are not relevant at all. So I do that. And then, are other departments doing it? Current, can you please?
Sure. The obviously monitoring them and an instruction that we can enforce from the Treasury to complete your quarterly financial statements. We have a list of those that do not comply. I think it's, once again, the enforcement factor is we do remind and say you didn't submit to us, but once again we go a bit further and we have a picture whether that's submitted or not and what we can do to help. We also at least look at that because for some of the five days it's completing set of income financial statements and the quality is not really improving and you can see that there's no real review of that financial statement so we've done a lot of things that we try and improve but because of most of those that can't only their exercise to comply with Treasury says. So I think it's been the quality information and trying to convince them that it has actually improved the process going forward. So I can certainly make it available to you who that's submitted in the world.
Chair is that, for example, an example in public work, for a very extended period of time, public work did not have the people that didn't have a particular idea. You just couldn't get the people to be there. So most of the departments that tend to be in the default of this, in the public area concern, tend to be the departments that do not have people in the departmental officer's office, either very little staff at the chief manager of the trash or the chief manager of the office. Himself or child is not there. So it tends to be those types of people. But engagement according to the department to make sure that we get improvement, not just in compliance, but in quality to the current system.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to raise one general question to Professor Smith on how the point the rooting of that I'm not looking at that. In relation to the attitude when the check was, in terms of the financial year, in terms of we have a provincial financial year. It's not the same local government, but this is their year, financial year, and it's around July. I just thought maybe I should take advantage to take a good decision in terms of how do we come in and offer. I know we have that discussion, but maybe just come to a conclusion whether is there anything in making the first technical vote that you discuss different in politics, if there is any kind of challenge in the electricity aspect in terms of the whole lot of the culture management of infrastructure.
My easily accessible knowledge of the constitution is failing me. I think there is a possibility because we're talking of cooperative governance in chapter 3 of the constitution. But there is also a bit of a challenge when you think about, I think, section 161, subsection 2 of the constitution, which then the intervention, what should be an intervention that comes from the earlier chapter. Because that chapter puts a lot of issues on the council in the municipality and the system act as well. So without saying you how you should, I would say consider those sections from section 150 of the constitution and one or two later sections and some provisions of the municipal systems act and the municipal structures act as well as the MFMA. MFMA generally makes reference to that. To the system that can structure that innovation to this issue. So those are considerations, that's the consideration that is taken. And then cut intervention, having those considerations in mind. I think there is some provision in the constitution that allow for that. What I'm not sure is whether they allow for that intervention at the level of parliament and legislatures or at the level of the executive. And then there's a thing, section 189 of the MFMA, which creates a permanent mechanism for the intervention by the provinces. And then how that can be utilized with the oversight structure of parliament, I don't know. I have never given thought to that issue. But consideration will have to be taken of some of those pieces of legislation before a decision is made. You know what the interesting thing about the bailout thing is that you want to go back to maybe let me leave it. Yeah, it's not as easy as that to control this came in the product chain, no. But also I think issues may take a particular intervention, but bailout definitely, you know. The question that has got to be asked here, and this is the question that goes to the water board. Certain institutions of government have got a certain responsibility about providing a particular service in bulk to another institution, which then provides that service to the people. Should the bulk supplying institution take responsibility for this service not reaching the people? Except to the extent that they are unable to supply the bulk components that they are supposed to supply. In other words, if ESCOM doesn't have the capacity to supply the electricity for the country, there will be no electricity for supply for the environment. So ESCOM is responsible for that, they're accountable for that. But when ESCOM is not paid by the municipality, 1 month or 2 months, whatever they should say, ESCOM also has the supply at that point. Because if you want, the municipality is going to make it fine, there's not going to be any consequences. It's the consequence we should talk about. The same issue with the water board. And I haven't known in the water board, but the legislation makes provision for a process to be entered into before a cut of water takes place. The institution is responsible for ensuring that citizens have got water in that municipality. The water board makes water available to the municipality. And therefore, we need to encourage the various institutions to take definitive measures necessary so that any. So the FCC 64 million is too difficult for a small municipality. But have you taken a punitive action while it was 10 million? It has been easier for the municipality to have an arrangement and pay.
So the same way as an accounting officer in a department, I'm accountable for the resources I'm managing. That's the first thing that is at home for in a waterfall. Accountable for showing that the resources and working capital is at disposal and managed. And part of what is managing that working capital is ensuring that what you supply is paid. So before we even go to the question about the bailout and so on, there's something in the system that's not working well. If you're not being paid for services, you cut for services and then get paid. Because if you don't do that, you actually expose the community to a much bigger problem down there when the debt is much bigger. You're going to have to cut at some point. So anyway, that care would be a way in which I would say this, not just think about the bailout.
I think the language is proof of the fact that they are so stupid to support the Burma Bond Bank to put last week of the second to the group of all of them. Another place that you the Auditor General seems to suggest that my office is that yes, we have a bigger number of departments that are qualified with issues, but they seem to be stuck that the financial are qualified, but no move towards the audit. So, what is our point here? Are we approaching that now in more? Taking into account that a department can have regular expenditure of half a billion, but for as long as they're disclosed, they will be unqualified. So being unqualified has not started to suggest that there are no serious deficiencies in the management of government. But that's the truth. They might disclose those things for their qualified. Is there anything serious and offensive about remaining, about being unqualified in advance? And let's go into the substance and the essence of this unqualified position. In the levels of the regulatory position, authorizing the position, process the way through the position. Secondly, on page 3, or the list of departments that do not have a paid process. By choice, it's voluntary. The department can decide whether or not you have a paid. When you are engaged in an exercise, that is part of the fulfillment of your responsibility in the national position. Ensure or check compliance by department. The issues around internal control. I think when I go through your report, there is this distinction between the glass that is half empty or half full. So at what point? This is the point, but then the facts will come again and say, these are the drawbacks. Elementary internal controls are crucial for the effective functioning of the department are often absent. That's the second sentence of the speech, but I'm sure that this will be very well. I'm looking for the big question around the local but the Auditor General, and hopefully I'm wrong, the Auditor General is to focus more on the local management. What is taking the definition of the quality of the internal control must be from such a data that they, and of course, and in some degree, the Auditor General must play some level of reliance on the work of the audit committee that is now in our body. Now, but we know that the root of all problems are financial. different from the alcohol. And for as long as these people are dry, what else may do will come to mind. And we have considered raising issues around self-control, police quality, gambling, ownership, functioning, powers, that. So I thought maybe an area that might require similar and sustained focus. Fix it and know that we have laid the foundation to fix everything else. And celebrate it about maybe a whole lot of people perish. But as long as this is not in place, we may have done it. I'm looking to you say what you have with the Russian state is going to be further around the high level of food level going to the Shah, the Shah, the Shah, the Shah, which seems to be continuously happening. Yes, it is closed, and for as long as it's closed, the Russian general is safety and qualified. But what does it say in terms of mental management of the company? I think, well, for us, that does need to be an issue that may extend to the danger. And I do see on page 8, we're talking about liability management, it indicates that the issue is structured on number 34, the 8th of November, 2011. By which you require national provincial departments to submit mathematical professional reports on the late informal payment of compliance. What is the response to this note? What effect has it led to either improvement or disclosure of it? And if there has been one, what are the trends? And I do think that there was page 9, the summary of key findings. We have seen out three issues. Asset management, IT and liability management. A lot of talk about IT and liability. On page 8, right on top, it is still concerning to note that many partners still spend to recognize the potential IT process and procedures, but maybe they are failure to recognize the threat, the risk and the danger caused by which IT control environment. I'm going to talk to that. We'll see what happens in the court of it last year, sometimes in our culture. The implications that it has in terms of processes manipulated beyond the decisions taken, capacity to govern problems, and to what extent, you know, at a certain level, potential of certain decisions that are bound to be normal, to eventually be taken after correct decisions have been made. But very worrying for me, which then maybe summarize the whole exercise in terms of health of what because and hopefully I'm including the situation. It appears as if we're operating from a perspective that says we are generally incredible people. And for us to achieve certain levels of progress, but very, very rather to say we are a country in a hurry to get things done. What is going to be done at the end of it? And therefore, where we are today is where we're supposed to be 2 years ago. And so there's a sense of agency in the way we do it. So we focus more on the destination rather on where we come from. Because maybe so many steps from where we went. So this is public. We are moving forward with the other. This is where we have to go. How far are we to our destination? And say, we have deployed people who promise to take us to that. that endpoint, and are they moving in the loop with me or not? Now, this is the improvement and continuously show that department and challenges in developing and implementing systems to improve financial management problems. That seems to suggest what's up. Or the best we can achieve really to achieve faith in terms of that financial in terms of that financial capability or because we don't seem to have the ability to improve and move beyond the level that we are. Or at least at the moment we are challenging. Unless with a different crop of managers or leaders or something similar happens in terms of the mindset that playing football. And for me raised that question around what are we doing? Are we moving forward to the network? This is how far we are from our stated objective, and this is the case we need to move into the able to be challenged. So,
I think the first issue that you make about the general issue of getting audit and making an example in an entity disclosing irregular expenditure and therefore because the report reflecting truthfully and accurately what has happened in the department and therefore the department has qualified. I think underscores the point I made at the beginning that audit reports tell us what another report is telling us. And nothing more and nothing less. I think I made that point and I emphasized that point. And it is particularly frustrating that oversight must worry about what the annual report is saying. Because you are likely to find that scenario when the accountable certifies say, look, I'm going to put everything on the table. And often, when an accounting officer is new in the department, it's nice to have you have that because you are not responsible for the things, it's very transparent. But the question is, has to be asked. So it's important that we understand the audit report for what it is and deal with it. It is not accepted to accept the fact that we do not have qualified audit reports and we end there. It is important that, in the same way as you look at that majority model from an operation point of view, running of a department point of view, you can think about that majority model from an oversight point of view. That the type of questions that you raise at different levels of majority are different types of questions. It frees the committee and oversight to ask questions, more questions that are evaluating that relate to service delivery imperative or on the capability of the state to improve a service delivery issue if the entity goes beyond level three, level four type of situation. So I think the context of thinking about improving financial management is an important consideration and understanding to have. I don't think it's sufficient to accept that a department is unqualified and stands there. And for instance, you recall the discussion we had with the chair that even though issues were not pervasive, but there were issues that were being raised. And the committee against those issues, and the DG had to say this is what I'm doing with those issues. And that's the kind of focus oversight, not our tool to be towards clean audit, but that's the most stable direction unqualified audit. But don't clean audit. And this is the point that I want to make without taking away from the usefulness of the audit report. Beyond clean audit. And in a clean audit environment, audit is still something more. Maybe let me start there. In a clean audit statement, the auditor general says something more than just saying there was nothing untoward. He could not find anything to suggest there are problems. He also says that in every other aspect that he looked at, there was absolutely nothing, even one thing that he was reporting on. Because if there are things that the auditor general put in the report, and then it's actually unqualified, but the auditor
President Peabody. So the statement about the Peabody says a lot more. Even with that, you must also remember it's based on a sample. There's a lot more transactions, there's a lot more activities taking place in the environment. And for some reason, the things that fall in the sample leave out one aspect that may have had some problem. Then you will have a picture of a clean audit, but you still have some issues in an organization. So it's never, that's why the statement the water jar rate is written in a negative sense, not in a positive sense all the time. That's why it's always written in a negative sense. I did not find anything that worries me. He never says there's nothing to worry about. Okay, if you get an examination by a doctor examining whether you've got cancer or not, they take a sample of the tissues and they do clean the sample, you do not find anything to worry about. So another doctor told him, I take them elsewhere and pick up something. So beyond that, that's why the most important report is always the accountability report that the accountant has given before and all of that. Because that report should be telling the whole story. An accounting officer cannot lie to Parliament. So that's important. Should not die. Yes. Our new meeting downstairs with an accounting officer and Honorable Mary May, social justice, exposed by the accounting officer for saying something that was the official for saying that was the most important topic. So I think that is the common, your summarizing of the issues around those issues around the regular space. I think they are on the mark. But more important, the interrogation of the report that is before, the entirety of the report as opposed to the focus on the audit report. Participation is it by choice? No, it's not by choice necessarily. But as we're beginning to implement the functional security maturity model, our strategy has been that of trying to get compliance through the situation rather than punitive measures. But what happens is then you pick up problems that require us to respond in terms of chapter 4 of the federal regulations, where the financial misconduct or suspected financial misconduct, and we communicate with the department. Then we have talked to the wound and said, you see, if you participated in the process, would have been able to warn you earlier. So we do put some pressure, but the pressure at the moment is not the pressure that Trump from the top of the mountain. We're trying to put pressure in our inaction to the Department of Participation. But it's not something that is by choice. We're trying to get everybody to do it. But our approach has been to get them to see the value. A patient can be diagnosed with having a heart disease. You are never, as a doctor, going to be able to get that patient to stop smoking. The patient will stop smoking on their own. And once they stop smoking, the improvement begins. So the idea as well here is that this is a tool that's going to help you solve your problem. And therefore we work with you to understand and appreciate the tool so that we can implement it. And mindful of the fact that for those unscrupulous individuals out there, it may be such a good thing to use the tool that will let them know the extent of the problem they're causing. Because they are agreeing. So there's always that dimension in this equation. So we're trying to get a lot of them to participate here, Chair. Our thinking about level 3 in terms of the internal control environment that we talk about, our thinking about ensuring that every department at least gets to level 3 is primarily informed by exactly the same issue that when you've got basic control issues like, might be linking to my clinical statement I just made a few minutes ago, that the unproven people thrive and they enjoy the chaos because the chaos feeds them. So the internal control weaknesses, by the way, one interpretation is that you need to help people who don't know, who are incapable, who don't have the wherewithal to do the right thing. But also, you must also keep at the back of your mind that you may be dealing with a person who wants the situation to be that way. And it is important that when we bring these things to the fore, from different fronts, from the general, internal audit, accounting general, to the extent we raise this issue, it's important that we find a way in which all of the other factors, government, committees, executive authorities, accounting officers, respond to this in the process. Because the value of our report lies not in the quality of the report and the fact that the report is accurate. The value of our report lies in the fact that people use them and use them to make decisions, and decisions that make improvement. In that, that's what we do with the work that we do. But it is in that stage where the challenges are, and the big work ought to take place. Once I have done the assessment in the department, and I say you still have the control, you have to be in control. What is it that I do? Without thinking just purely about ability and merit, what is it that I do that makes these people to sort of appreciate the point to a point where they do something about it? And part of it is about inspiring the shepherds, you know, the scope and say, Kevin, a Toronto is coming to see you tomorrow. You can ask this question. Part of it is about referring to the executive authority so that the executive authority can begin to ask questions that are appropriate. And these things take time to change. And the strategies are the strategies that we implement. Last week, I referred with another executive authority of another department. And I said to the executive authority, oh, you sent your guys come and talk to me about this issue. And we have discussed. Things that you did not ask them to ask me, or they didn't ask me, they didn't ask them, are ABCD. And this is what I see happening in your department, in the information that I have. And I think we need to be worried about this issue and have more questions from the academic. All of those things are meant to go beyond just putting a report on the table and announcing people and announcing them and the hope that people are going to improve the job. These control checks, it is a problem and it requires a singular focus and sustained approach to face. And our focus on up to level at this moment is meant to make sure that we get everybody, without clearly a lot of people, in that point, and then we can move it again to talk about things at higher level. And the implications of oversight as well, in terms of what questions that oversight raise on the report that they have when there are no control issues in relation to other aspects of the accountability report. What has been the response relating to the KCJ? At first, some departments did not report. But because we introduced this instruction note on the instruction from the president, we work with the presidency when there are departments that are not. We write letters that the DG or within the president finds and sends to his colleague to say, you've got submitted this information. And we've seen improvement at least from a compliance point of view that at least people are bringing the information. Now, that is providing the information to us. The information aspect shows a very bad picture. And obviously, we're having a very short period of time to have a meaningful assessment of the impact of it. And I'm hoping that oversight will bear with us on that one. And taking steps then from that information and dealing with the various departments is action that has been happening. And we are assistance of the president. And what we are seeing is that institutions are beginning to put structures in place to make sure that it's monitored. Because small enterprises suffer when this thing happens. And therefore one of the five priorities, two of the five priorities will suffer when small enterprises go under and employment will suffer as one member. So the trend that we're picking up is that at the level of tax compliance submitting the information we had a positive improvement. At the level of departments beginning to implement measures to deal with this potential improvement on that, the outcome of those interventions by departments, we haven't had sufficient data to analyze and say it is because of those interventions that is going to see improvement and so on. Bearing in mind, not all of the information will verify independently, and therefore there is also that element in the information that we deal with. Hence, we would rather have a longer period of time for assessment for us to be able to make meaningful. But the steps that we are seeing being taken are positive steps. That's how far I can go. I cannot agree with you more on the last point you're making about what should we aim? Should we just aim on reaching level and say that I don't think we should be aiming much higher. So IT control as an enabler is an important tool that you've got to have. Again, two streams of thought in my head. One get certain people to understand, but some people need to get different strategies for them to begin to comply and take the issue seriously around IT control. And it's very serious, I mean, not just the protocol, it's very serious mechanism through which crime syndicates are able to use IT generally to get access to information they should have and get access to things that they shouldn't have. And it is an area that is absolutely critical. We intervened in one department where they granted a contract to an extremely questionable service provider. And it was in the area of IT. And we made this intervention because we were able to pick up information elsewhere that led us to this issue. So the appreciation has to be such that even at the level of awarding contracts to people that are going to participate, start logging into the things of government and working in that space, you need to be very, very vigilant about how you go through those processes. And this one was potentially going to impact billions of rents. But fortunately, we were able to pick it up right at the beginning of the contract, and then the department is taking the necessary steps with the people concerned and the service provider. And again, that is actually the department is going to take. We thought that we create control. So it's absolutely critical to share that we create that culture, that appreciation for this issue. And in fact, speaking to the things that Honorable Roy was saying, that we should move away from just saying, deal with the audit outcome, and put a much higher target that says, aim for a clean audit as a target, so that we all aspire for the higher ideal. And I think they are here. The statement here, at the back of the statement that says, elemental controls are an issue. That is a roundup to my when you say elemental controls are a problem, what you also suggesting here without saying it in that report is that actually the issues that we need to deal with are actually not sophisticated. We don't need rocket science to deal with it. We just need to do the basics. You do the basics right, and a lot of the problems get solved. And then I'm not naive to suggest that bigger problems that we need to deal with. But if we don't deal with this small one, we are leaving ourselves in a pool of confusion. That is, for too many things that are coming up. And some people will trust us to deal with the small issues. So if we deal with these small issues now, we then go to have sufficient capacity and focus to deal with the bigger issues and better clarity to deal with the bigger issues. And it's important that we create that culture in government. I am pleased that the Minister of Public Safety and Administration seems to be containing herself with exactly that question. We can argue and talk about what she's suggesting also. But what's important is Minister Kelsey, who wants to answer this question, who wants to hear this question and find answers to this question, is called a workshop next week. So we're grappling with this issue as public service. That's an important issue because she's bringing us in as public service to say, let's deal with this issue, let's find ways that you confront this issue. So I'm thinking that, we're picking up that there are positive developments that are in the right direction, but they won't be done. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Jamal. We should call this closing session to a close. I'm not going to engage, we're not going to engage for the closing session. Thank you very much. We will not be having water affairs because after they confirmed last week that they're coming on Wednesday, which led to my announcement, Saturday morning, so we called to say, Minister, and less than an hour after you receive the SMS from the department called, that I will rhythm and a group analysis. But thank you very much. See you after some time.
When's the next meeting? 15.
Next time.
When's the time? I don't know when the time is.